Greetings, listener. Welcome to Committee Quest.
Hello, and welcome to this very special edition of Zone of Truth. Today, we're going to be speaking to another game master and experienced player of tabletop RPGs. This is going to be a regular feature in Zone of Truth, so today's format's going to be a little bit interesting. I'm going to be interviewing our guest, and our guest is going to be interviewing me as well. Okay, I'd like to welcome Chris Bond to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm really good, Chris. How are you?
Yeah, really good, actually. I'm really, really well.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So, Chris, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
I am a theatre director. I'm a person who makes art. I'm also a dungeon master, a storyteller, a game master, all of those different terms. I play and enjoy tabletop RPGs.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. That is very good. You are what we want to hear from. Chris is also the editor of Baby Beard Media's Shut Up and Take My Podcast.
Oh, that's true. I am. Yeah, I do my own podcast on Baby Beard Media.
That's right. And he is also a player character in their new endeavor, which is a cyberpunk 2020 live action role play.
Actual play.
Actual play.
The podcast is called Rolled to Cast. R-O-L-E to Cast.
That's right, and it's very good. I've been enjoying it.
Bunch of actors being bad at D&D and role playing games. Yeah,
they're pretty good.
Yeah. Are we? Oh, that's good.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it a lot. I've been listening to that when they come out pretty much on the day. Mm. It's been good. You guys are doing well, and it's a cool theme, you know. The cyberpunk stuff is definitely my jam, and I'm enjoying the seedy underbelly of cyberpunk.
It's good. It's a lot of fun. It's a game I haven't played before.
Yeah.
So it was the first time I got to play it, was recording it. So that was a lot of fun.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. I'm listening, and I'm just curious. So the difficulties are pretty high. You get like a difficult thing is a 20. So do you guys roll D? Is it a D6 game?
It's D10.
Ah, D10.
It's D10 game, and like, it's really, so it's punk game, and we'll talk more about like, because I have some opinions about what makes a really good game and what makes a really bad game.
Yeah.
But I think it's like an average stat sits around 12. Like if you're good at something, if you're proficient at something, it's usually a 12. So you're looking to beat 15 to 20 on a D10.
Okay.
So it's between, I think, 5 and 8 you're trying to roll.
Okay.
As a general kind of rule. So.
And you just roll the one die?
Just one die. If you 10s, it's 10 agains. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you can play that game with one D10 each?
I think so, yeah. I think there's a few times you might want to roll a couple of times, but yeah.
Okay, cool. Mm. All right. Very, very cool. All right. Well, I think we might get into... I've got some formal questions here, but we will... I mean, knowing how Chris and I talk, there's going to be tangents. So the first one is, tell us about your first experience playing tabletop role-playing games.
So the first time I ever played tabletop role-playing games was when I was 8 years old. I was
very young, Chris.
Yeah, I'm a weird person. my cousins, who are a little bit older than me, but not old enough to be responsible, got a copy of Baldur's Gate and the PC game. And we got to play it. The younger me, being like a 7 or 8 year old, and my little brother, who was like 6 at the time, were playing Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
Which is, in retrospect, not great, but it's formative years.
I imagine there's stuff that just went over your head as an 8 year old.
Totally. There was all sorts of stuff. Looking back on it, I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
But no, what you can do in Baldur's Gate is it shows you the dice rolls down below. If you go into the settings, it can show you the dice rolls. And we went, oh, what's this? What does this mean? And through no understanding of Dungeons & Dragons at all, we reverse engineered the system out of it, went, hey, if you had a random number generator, you could like make this a thing with pen and paper. So We got some Casio calculators.
Yeah.
Programmed them so that whenever you hit enter, it randomly generated a number between 1 and 20.
Mm.
And then, like, we then discovered a copy of the Monster Manual for 2nd Edition Advance and went, right, there is a logic to this. And so we reverse engineered Dungeons and Dragons out of the video games using a copy of a Monster Manual and played a game which I ran when I was 8. And it was mad.
Yeah, right. So you went about it the easy way then.
Yeah, exactly. It was super intuitive and, you know, straight out of the red box. We had no idea. We just kind of...
And have you gone back? I mean, I'm assuming you have, but have you discovered how close you got to...
We were completely off.
Yeah, okay.
We were super good. Way off. Okay. Because the cool thing about it and the thing that's like informed my storytelling and DMing from that point on was that we were focused on story.
Yeah, okay.
We weren't super like fixated on the rules. The rules were there, but because we largely made them up and kind of like reverse engineered them, it was about three adventurers fending off assassins. It wasn't about going into a tavern and, you know, fighting some rats for your first encounter.
It was it was a story that you guys modified with random calculator rolls.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, hitting, cool, man.
Hitting equal a lot and different numbers coming up and adding them to numbers that we kind of pulled from our ass. And
Yeah. Very cool. All right, so that actually leads straight into your first session, which is the first session you run. And did you continue to run there, or was there a break?
Stopped playing pretty much almost immediately afterwards. I think we ran two games or like a 4-hour or 5-hour game and then stopped pretty much immediately because we thought it was like, you don't really, I don't know, you sometimes don't know that you can keep going when you're a kid. So we just kind of stopped and were, you know, like small children distracted onto something else. But we came round and another friend of mine, we talked about it and he went, Dungeons and Dragons, and knew a bit about it and he kept playing. And we being the weird kids that we were, didn't want to play from the box. So we were reading, the Redwall series, which was the Animal Knights book series.
Yeah.
I remember who the author is. So we recreated Baldur's Gate with animals, with knights and shining armor and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Nice, man. That is,
we pushed on with that for a little while. But what about you? Where did you get started?
I had a bit of... I didn't really do much when I was younger. I knew what Dungeons & Dragons was because I've got an older brother who is about 12 years older than me, and he was given the red box when he was about 12 or 13. So that was sort of in the house growing up, and I can remember him having like D&D nights when I was really young. So maybe I would have been 8 or 9 and... You know, he was 20 and being cool and smoking cigarettes and drinking beer and didn't want his dorky little brother hanging out. But it wasn't until I was in high school in year 13, because I did year 12 twice because I was that good at it.
Nice.
And I didn't have any friends when I went back to do year 13, so I sort of found myself in the year 12 room, and there were these guys in there talking about, they were talking about video games and stuff. We became friends. And then one of them was like, hey, my brother plays Vampire the Masquerade and he loves it. And he's going to run a game for us. So year 12 was a lot of Vampire the Masquerade. And I really, really got into it. I was like, you know, I bought the book, and I bought the book in year 12 when I didn't work very much. And at the time, I think it was like
huge investment.
That was an $80 book.
Yeah.
You know? Still absolutely. Got it. It's right there on the shelf. There it is. And I even bought Requiem when that came out as well, but never played that one. So that was the year of Vampire, and we never really played it after year 12 again. I always found myself going back to the books. And I really wanted to play a game again when all that, when Twilight became a thing. And I was like, these are not vampires. Vampires are murderers.
In defiance of like what pop culture had turned them into.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that never happened. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, my brother came up with his nephews and busted out the red box and was like, hey, we're going to play D&D. And we're playing. And so I'm pretty sure that's early second edition, or maybe even first edition. Second edition. Pretty sure it's second edition.
Red box?
Mm.
Can't remember. It might be first edition.
It was pretty early. It was early, yeah. And I was like, hey, this would be really... I'm a high school teacher. I was like, this would be really cool to do in class. And then I found out that Wizards had released fifth edition, so I bought that. And I was again sitting in my room by myself reading that book. And yeah, so that's sort of when it sort of came back to life for me. And I started going to Adventurers League and things like that.
So for you, it was sort of something other that older brother played. Mm. And then it became something that you discovered in high school, at the end of high school,
mm-hmm.
through Vampire, and then a return to it later on.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really taken me now, hence D&D podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's been good. And I know the first session that I ran was I bought Tales of the Yawning Portal and started running a campaign using those adventures. And that ran for a little while. And then I was running Adventurers League games, and I've sort of been doing that ever since. And now I run all the D&D. I've got three sort of games that are running in my...
You have three?
Yeah, yeah, I've got...
That's huge.
Yeah. Well, the two of them are on the back burner at the moment, okay. But they're coming back soon. And they're all in the same world, and they're all sort of in the same time frame.
Nice.
So...
Interweaving stories?
Yeah, the other ones find remnants of the others, and I'm trying to sort of, you know, I play with time so that they're not in the same place at the same time.
We had a similar thing happen. We were playing as part of a Dark Heresy setting.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Cool. The Monday crew were heretics. They were the apostate. They were the enemy. And then there was a Puritan group that followed them and was trying to track them.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
And they met like on a Friday. So it gave the DM like 4 days worth of time to kind of like figure out how their actions would and whether they would be caught or anything like that.
Yeah, okay. But
the cool thing was that the players chasing them had no idea that it was another player group.
Ah, see, that's cool.
So then when they did catch them, the games came together and the DM was like, the players were like, because I was one of the players who knew we were the enemy. We rocked up to this game and there's all these people who were like, who are you guys? This is our session. Like, we're here. And I'm like, no, this is our session. Where the guys that you've been chasing for a couple of months, and they're like, you're this character? And we're like, yeah, we're those guys.
Yeah,
we've been
cool.
doing this to you. And they're like, that nearly killed us. And we're like, great. We didn't know that. We just left that trap behind.
See, that's what I'm working for with these. Yeah, so there's so two good. Groups that are like against each other, but they don't know it. But they kind of do now because they are like most of the people that play are in Adventurers League. And I told one group, I'm like, hey, look, you just don't tell them what you're playing and what the deal is. And I told them all about this other group, the good guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you're welcome to talk to them and try and get information out of them. And we'll just call that espionage, you know. Like, that's not a problem at all. But I'm not too sure how blurred those lines are now because we haven't played for about 2 months, but we're picking up in a couple of weeks. So I'll see. It's very exciting. And then there's the podcast as well, but the podcast is same world, and things that those two other parties do affect that. But yeah, I try and do anything that I run, in my world has an impact. Like at school, I run the D&D club.
Mm-hmm.
And if I, now the kids really run it, I don't have to do much, but if I do have a DM, I get that whatever happens, whatever they do in that session happens for real. So they burnt down a inn one of the towns, which happened to be an inn that was owned by one of my other players.
Oh,
so
fantastic.
The next session I rocked up, I'm like, hey man, you get word that someone's burned down your inn. And so he sent off, she sent off some people to go search for who did that.
Fantastic. That's excellent.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like that. And I think that's why I love it so much.
Yeah.
Because it's just, you know, and why I like running so much is because there's all this narrative going on that the players aren't aware of at the time, but then they find out later. Do you prefer to play or to I mean, I know DMing or GMing is playing as well, but do you prefer, what do you like better?
I think it depends on, it depends a lot on the system and the game. I think, depends who I'm playing with, honestly. Like, mm-hmm. I was thinking, like, it depends on the system. No, that's not true. Depends on who I'm playing with. Yeah. There are people who I very happily will be like, I want you to be DM. I want you, I like your style. I like what you do. Mm-hmm. It's different to what I do or something like that. And then there are others who I really like running games for.
Yeah.
Not that I don't like them being DMs or anything like that. I really enjoy their input as players.
Yeah.
So largely it depends on who I'm playing with.
I think
one of the guys who is in the podcast, Roltercast podcast, Phil, he runs excellent games and I really enjoy when he's running a game. He's a really excellent storyteller, dungeon master, referee. But there are other people who I would really enjoy their players' interaction. So it depends.
Yeah, I'm the same. I some games I find myself wishing I was behind the seat, not because the person's doing a bad job or whatever. Maybe it's just how I'm feeling at the time. There's other days where I'm really happy to just, and it is, it does make a difference with the group you've got, you know, like Adventurers League can be sort of a real mishmash.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's not as great as a player and it's better to run, for me.
Mm.
But like I've got a friend who, I'm playing in their campaign and they play in my campaign and I'm happy either way, because it's just really good.
Yeah.
Although I've struggled with other, having mainly run D&D and not run many other systems, I've been trying to. Like I gave, I really want to play lots of Blades in the Dark, but I don't, haven't really. Have you heard about Blades in the Dark?
No.
Oh, man.
What's its setting?
So it's basically a, to give you like the one line, mm-hmm. it is a, kind of like a gothic steampunk heist RPG.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really cool, man.
I like that. Gothic steampunk. Okay.
Yeah, heist. It's like there's a whole big backstory about how they use energy from demons to power everything, and there's all these big walled cities and there's demons just in these huge expansive,
right.
I think it's ocean. Okay. I'm pretty sure it's the ocean. So the whole economy is based around that. So there's these, I'm pretty sure they're called Leviathans that go out into the ocean to capture demons and bring their energy back so they can power the whatever they're doing. But the city is filled with all these gangs and factions, and your party plays a crew, you know?
Yeah,
And you've all got different abilities and it's cool, man. It's really cool.
I'll check it out. What's it called?
Blades in the Dark. I've got
Blades
it here. I'll give you a look after. It's really good.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I gave that a go, but I think I needed to prepare quite a bit more, and I think players needed to have a bit more of a read up. And I tried running a vampire for the first time ever, which I totally struggled with. But I will persist with that because I really like vampire.
Vampire's hard.
Yeah.
Vampire is, well, for me, running lots of different games. Going back to what you were saying about trying to, like, I think when a bad DM is running a game, and I think there are bad DMs.
Yeah.
I can usually tell when a DM is bad when they aren't listening to you.
Yeah.
Right? And they're not listening
to reading the table.
Reading the table is my kind of, like, and I mean listening not just in like a hearing, like, I'm going to suggest this, you're going to respond to it. I mean listening in that holistic kind of, like, what are the energy the players are bringing to the table?
Is everyone whipping out their phones? Is there a lot of table talk? Are people sort of huffing?
Mm.
You know,
and I actually quite enjoy most styles of play. Like I've gone from like rules light games to like rules heavy, like basically like battle simulation games. Like fourth edition is widely considered.
And you played quite a bit
of love fourth edition.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of fun. But I'm also the guy who will whip out Fiasco and call that an RPG.
okay.
which has like no rolling at all.
Yeah,
and
right.
Like,
okay.
Basically, just come up with a story. Right. So like I sit on that full spectrum
yeah,
where
for
I'm
sure.
like both systems are totally great. But my thing is like if the DM doesn't align the group to what the game is about, then and isn't also open to what the players want,
yeah.
then you can be playing your favorite game and we can be playing our favorite game. It still won't work.
Yeah, that's right.
So I think it's about, you know, like I'm always about just listening in the room and trying to be present around the
yeah,
table.
Yeah, and I think that's what it really, that's one of the key things if you're running a game is to just understand your table, read your table, manage your table. Unless you are, you know, super prepared, and you should be relatively prepared anyway, but like unless you are completely captivating them and driving the story, then you need to be really listening to what's happening at the table, you know?
Like, but even the driving the story comes from where the players go. We consent to you taking the narrative and you drive it, and we're reactionary players. We're the reactionary part of this narrative. You're mm-hmm. the primary driver.
Mm.
Whereas there are players who are like, give me agency. You cannot take this away from me. Like, I understand that you have this massive meta plot, this whole thing, but I want player agency. And if if both don't recognize that the intentions of the other are there, then it's a huge kind of mess up.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it's having that expectation or giving players some sort of expectation about what to expect.
Mm.
Like I've rocked up to sessions before that we had all this story stuff going on last session, and then when we rocked up the next time, it was like 4 hours of combat, and that's cool, but that was not what, and it was pretty clear that they hadn't really prepared to connect to all that stuff that we had done in a session before. And it would have just been good to say, hey, look, I'm not prepared for that. Do you want to do combat, or do you want to play something else, or does someone else want to run something?
Mm.
Because I'd been thinking about it for 2 weeks. I'm like, oh man, this happened and that happened. I wonder how this is going to go. Oh, I'm going to say this. And then it was like, oh yeah, you're being invaded. I was like, oh, that's not where the story was going.
That's right. This feels like a dissonance. This is a dissonance between.
And it was pretty clear because, you know, we wiped the table, and then, oh, there's another wave. Oh, okay. All right.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's always worried me when DMs don't feel like they can be honest with their players.
Yeah.
That concerns me. When DMs are deceitful with their players.
No.
That's totally a tactic, and that's legitimate.
Yeah.
But when they don't feel like they can be honest at all with their players, like there's been plenty of times where I've gone to players, I'm like, I am not prepared. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, you've done this, that's completely changed my story. And they're like, oh, wow, okay, that was an important NPC. I'm like, yeah, you
killed that guy.
Significantly altered the story. And we all have a laugh, and they go, so you're going to need like 10 minutes. I'm like, make it 20 and we can come back to the table in a second while I figure out what the hell has to happen.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And that's totally a thing to do. And I don't know whether that's an inexperienced thing. Cause my attitude is, that I'm not great and I'm always trying to be better. I definitely have really bad sessions, and even there's been times we've been recording the podcast and I've been caught off guard, or I've been busy and didn't prepare as much as I should have. But like just reflecting on that and being aware of it makes a big difference, and being okay with saying, oh, look, I either don't want to, or I don't know if it's a pride thing that some people have or a control thing that it's like, well, no, I'm the DM, so we're running the game.
I think it's for a lot of new DMs, I think it's an anxiety thing.
Yeah, maybe.
Or maybe 50-50. I guess some people get into DMing for a power trip.
Yeah, perhaps.
I guess that's true.
And you, like, I hear stories of that. Like, I hear, you know, but I haven't really experienced that. But you see on Twitter, you know, people, oh, this DM did this. And I'm like, oh, man. Who the hell is that guy?
There were some real horror stories out there.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been a few that have been, I've just been like, what is going, like, that's no fun for anybody.
Yeah. What are you trying to get out of it?
Yeah. And that's what I find is, I mean, part of the reason why I think what really hooked me is that it's a social game and it's a way to host a gathering with people you like that are fun and entertaining, and it not be like we're just having dinner or we're getting drunk or, you know, or sitting in silence. Well, like, whilst I love watching films and I love watch films all the time, get your friends together to watch a film can be great, but you're also not really interacting with each other. And having moved to the country, new place, was an excellent way to make really strong, solid friendships.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people at Adventurers League, you talk to them and they're like, yeah, man, we didn't really have much of a social element going on until we started playing. And now they've got these really good, really, really strong social networks. I think that is, I do have a question here as well. Do you have, kind of sort of is what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
To new DMs or DMs that want to improve, what are some tips that you would give them?
Don't watch Critical Role.
Yeah, don't expect to be like Critical Role.
Yeah, like that. Listen to what the players around the table are doing.
Yeah.
Know what you want to achieve out of the game. Know what your style is.
Yeah.
If you don't, that's totally fine as well. But communicate to your players at every opportunity,
yeah,
honestly, about what you as a DM are going through, because the amount of times I've seen new DMs, are we allowed to swear on this one?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, sweet. The amount of times I've had new DMs panic and go into meltdown because something is going wrong that they haven't planned for, it's a lot. Whereas on the flip side, some of the best DMs, their first start was when they were half drunk around a group of players who were half drunk and said, "We begin our tale in the cave of tits." And it's just like, that's fantastic. Everyone understands the tone of the game and instantly we're in, right? Like, you can imagine a bunch of half cut, like,
yeah,
absolutely in a back shed going, let's go to the and just like, but it's a good game because everyone understands the tone.
Yeah.
Tone setting is a really important thing. Don't look to professionals in the same way that you shouldn't look to like Spielberg when you're starting out as a filmmaker.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, all those guys are awesome, and there is so much content out there now that you can watch. Like, I actually don't watch Critical Role that often. I watched a few episodes. I think Mercer's like awesome, and I get lots of tips from that guy because that guy is very cool, man, and his players are very cool. But all those guys are professional voice actors, and they, you know, and that's their job as well.
And what you don't see is behind all that is a production meeting where all the actors and the DM sit down along with a producer and a showrunner who go, okay, here's what this is about. Here's what we're trying to achieve with our game. Here are the emotional beats. Here are the story beats. Like, this is the setting and genre of this show. Because it's not just it's not just a game of D&D. It's a show about people playing D&D.
Yeah.
And so that's like fundamentally different, because if you try and copy that, you're not copying D&D. You're copying a show about D&D.
Yeah.
Which is like watching Stranger Things and trying to copy D&D from the kids playing it there.
Yeah. And you can see how Critical Role have evolved over time. And I think that those guys are still having a huge blast.
It's fantastic.
And yeah, it is. It is really good.
Yeah.
But you can't think that that's what your game's going to be like. I mean, you can certainly aspire to that if that's what you're keen on. What about in regards to like systems or preparation, or what do you think new GM should be? You know, go for interest or go for...
I think it should largely be informed by your players. So if you... I guess it depends on how your game gets set up, but I'm presuming that you know your players. Your game should be informed by them. If you are playing with someone like a three or four friends who collectively, like, your favorite sorts of movies are like The Usual Suspects and, like, you know, crime thrillers,
yeah,
well, then there's your genre, there's your style of game, pick that.
Yeah,
start.
Yeah.
You know, if you love Reservoir Dogs and Natural and The Usual Suspects, just
run that
yeah, that as a game,
sure,
and see what happens.
Yeah,
because you all, like, collectively, not just because it's an interest of yours, but because all, like, four or five people around the table know what that's about.
Yeah, for sure.
They know the genre, they know the tone, they know, like, what you are trying to achieve, and they will help you achieve that. That's why D&D is really a good starting place, because there's lots of memes about it, but you can kick down the door.
Yeah.
Right? You can kick down the door to the dungeon and start, and everyone will generally align to that if they haven't played D&D before. Who was it recently that was playing, like, D&D? Oh, our local, like, radio station.
Oh, yeah, they came down and checked it out.
They came down and checked it out. And, like, you kind of know that that's, they understand that that's the tone of the game. Like,
yeah,
to kill the monsters, to save the...
Yeah, that's right. I actually, that's my experience. So, with the D&D club, I get those kids to try and run games as much as possible. We've got all of our year 12 seniors kids are leaving this year. We've got all these younger kids that I'm like, okay, you're all going to have to start. Because this isn't going to run. Like, we can't have 25 people and me running everything. So you guys are going to need to step up and have a go at DMing. And my advice to them is, like, get them into a dungeon quickly. Because if you leave them in town for too long, they're going to get into all sorts of mischief. So if you get them confined into a dungeon that's got four rooms, you only need to prepare for four rooms worth of stuff.
Yep.
You know, and that's a great way to... I guess people talk about, you know, starting small, you know.
Yeah, start small. Start. The great thing about dungeons is that they allow for creativity within them. That's why fantasy is really good.
Yeah.
And D&D is so good, is because you put those four players into four rooms and they spend all of the first two, three rooms talking in character with each other about the, like, romance or intricate relationships between the characters. You know what characters they're playing. You know what game they want to play.
Yeah, that's
right. And
then
you can cater to that.
Yeah.
Right? You give them, instead of a long rest being, like, quickly described and the healing up really quickly, you describe the wood crackling on the fire.
Yeah, yeah.
You describe the night sky, and these two characters have their bed rolls next to each other and they lean over to each other and you let the scene run. Whereas if you're playing with, like, people who want to kick down that door, kill those monsters, a long rest is where you get hit points back.
Yeah.
You restore your,
restore
your spells. And, you know, you will discover that by starting small.
Yeah.
And it's in those small moments where you're going, right, I've got to pay attention to that. I've got to pay attention to these players.
Mm-hmm.
What are they bringing to the table? What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? What do they engage with what don't they engage with? How do they approach monsters and situations? All of that.
Yeah. 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 I completely agree with that, because it's just, like, I know from my experience that when I first started, I was like, yeah, I've made this town, and I didn't make it very big. And then first time running D&D, and we spent 5 hours in the town,
you
know, and it was like, I'm like, I didn't make an NPC for the blacksmith. Why do these guys want to go to the blacksmith for?
That's right.
And so even if just putting them in the dungeon, say, this is the quest you've been given and you've been thrown together with this. If it's your first time, just go and do that.
Absolutely.
Another thing I would say is be prepared, because for me, I've been using something called the Lazy Dungeon Master's Guide, or Return of the Lazy Dungeon Master's Guide by Sly Flourish. And it's a really simple, awesome little book. That has sort of, I think it's about 10 steps for preparation, and just makes prepping for a game so much easier. And it's all about connecting to what players have been doing and what they want, what happened in the last session, and then throwing in tidbits of new secrets that they might discover and things like that. It's really, really good. So that's like maybe 2 hours worth of prep for a 4 to 6 hour session.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't use half of the stuff that you've sort of prepped for.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is over prepare, right? Like, that's always the case.
And you're always going to. And if you don't use it, you're just going to throw it in later anyway. Yeah, it's there.
Exactly.
Like, there's plenty of encounters and things like that that I've been like, oh, man, yeah, I've designed this encounter. I'm like, ah, oh, well, they went and did shopping.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, well. Oh, they've gone to, I've made this forest encounter. It's like, ah, oh, well, I'll just switch them into something a bit deserty because now they're in the desert.
I've got, I'm preparing for my Vampire the Masquerade game.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about this.
And I have 50 NPCs. I have the entire city of Adelaide mapped out in terms of its like vampiric community, culture, politics, all of that, right? I've got that now. I don't have to do any more, right? I don't have to do any more work.
Yeah.
It'll run itself now. I've done the preparation. But that's over preparing.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way I'm going to use like 80, I'm not even going to use 20% of that.
No, probably not. No. But you've got it, and
but
it's fun.
It, and it's there. But it's also that preparation, and I guess this goes into like what we're talking about in terms of like how to prepare.
Mm.
Prepare based on what the players bring to the table.
Yeah.
If you get, let's use Vampire because D&D has a combat element kind of built into it. You're always, almost always typically going to build combat encounters.
Yeah.
But Vampire doesn't necessarily have that.
Nope.
If you have four players who stat four characters and none of them have combat, don't make combat encounters at all. Like, you don't have to. Not all role-playing games have to have combat.
Yeah, that's right.
And so if you've got an investigator, an intellectual, like a socialite, a tech whiz, mm-hmm. like someone who works with animals, you know, all of these are a driver, but you have no one with combat, no one with firearms, no one with brawl, no one with weaponry, none of that. Don't build combat.
Don't start with goons.
Just don't do it.
Yeah.
The players have indicated to you that they don't want to pursue that. Through their design of their characters.
That's right. And you can still do risky encounters that
totally.
Could end up in combat, but they're going to have other ways to get out of that. So don't anticipate them wanting to fight these guys.
That's right. And they will know as they've built those characters, they will know that combat is something dangerous to them.
Yeah.
You know, they will all go, oh, we all are combat avoidance. Right. So that set the tone of the game. So any threat suddenly becomes magnified because any potential opportunity for violence to break out, they're like, oh, we don't like that. We don't want that.
Yeah,
so it
becomes
this really interesting game of avoiding fights. But again, like, it's informed by what the players bring to the table.
Yeah. So that Blades in the Dark has got some cool mechanics for that.
Mm.
So they have there's mechanics for like standoffs and things. It's so good. And the way that it's described in the book is fantastic. Yeah. That I think that, that was what I was going to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
How did you go about, so have your players in that from Roll to Cast, have they played Vampire before?
No, never.
How did you go about character creation with them?
So we did, I got the 20th, we're running from the 20th anniversary edition.
Okay, that's the one that came out last year?
No, so that's
this year.
That was 2011, I think.
Oh, okay. Right. Oh, that one, yes.
Vampire 5th edition or Vampire V5.
Yeah, that was last year.
Came out last year or the year before, I think.
Yeah.
So what Vampire 20th edition has is like 500 or 600 pages. It's huge. And it's like a encyclopedia of all the previous books of like the 20 years that's come before Vampire.
Wow.
So it's got a lot of stuff in there. A lot of it spoils the game for new players if they haven't played it before. So I went through the book and created little Bibles for them.
Selected sections. Yeah,
and
yeah,
went,
cool.
Right, here's what I'm going to reveal about the game to you.
Yeah.
And then went, here are the character sheets. Here are the classes that you can pick. Here are the clans that you can pick. Here's what a character sheet looks like. Here's what an average character sheet looks like. Here's what the setting is. Here's how kind of Vampire happens. Describe to me what you want to play from that. Like,
mm-hmm.
read it, take your time, go away, come back to me with what you've got. And then we discussed with that from that point on, like,
mm-hmm.
what tone they got from the books, what tone they got from the art that I was showing them and the videos that I was showing them. And then from that, we got some characters.
Okay.
And then I began to reveal a little bit more and a little bit more.
Yeah, okay. And recording for that's coming up, isn't it?
That's coming up really shortly, actually.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, it's going to be intense.
Yeah. So these guys have the Roll to Cast guys have got a very cool way of doing their recording.
Mm.
And it is what weekend of
It is, yes.
3 days?
This one will be 3 days of recording.
Oof.
So we are doing Saturday, I think, 3 p.m. till 9 p.m. Sunday is 3 p.m. till 9 p.m.
Yep.
Monday, I think, is 9 a.m. till 3 p.m. And then Tuesday is all day.
Just until it's done.
Until it's done. So that's our kind of like patch day. Like that's our, because we're making podcasts and that means that we have to. So again, like that's a, I guess that's a thing that you have to prepare for as well. Like,
what's your medium?
What's your medium? Exactly. And what are your constraints? So like in the same way that players inform your play style or your DM style, the constraints around the game, inform your play style. Are you playing with people under the age of 12? Are you playing with adults? Are you playing with, people who have triggers? Are you, are you playing with a 2 hour time constraint?
Yep.
Do you have, players with ADHD? Do you, all of these things are things that you need to be aware of, not because you have to like, not because of any like nonsense about like worrying about them as people, but because that's informing your game.
Yeah.
You know, if you're 16 year olds and mum has to come pick you up because you can't drive yet, that, you know, don't get bummed out about that. We're all there at some point.
Yeah, that's
man.
Right. You got to go home sometimes.
Yeah, you got to go home. But like, that's a consideration. Like, are players flaky? Do players, or not flaky, but are they unable to commit? Do they have jobs that don't allow them to? Well, that's all going, and you still want to play with them, and they still want to play with you. It's not it's not a source of tension. You've got to create a game that flows around that.
Yeah, that's right. And it's it is very different depending on where you are. Like my Adventurers League, I tell the table, I'm like, you can go and do whatever you want, but this is a film, and the camera is on the action. So if you want to go and explore this random shop, you do that off screen. Because we've got 2 hours to do this adventure. At school with the kids, that's pretty much a free-for-all. I just want those kids to enjoy it however they go. But sometimes I'll be like, right, we're doing an Adventurers League adventure, and it's 2 hours, and we're going to knock this out right now. The podcast, I just sort of let that go where it needs to. However, I do think that, like, we did a puzzle in the podcast about episode 4. Doing a visual puzzle in a podcast is, I'm probably never going to do that again. That was quite a challenge for all involved. I mean, it was fun. One of our players, James, he ended up making a spreadsheet whilst on the podcast because he wanted to figure out the puzzle.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, he's a spreadsheet guy. But depending on what you're doing, and that that also impacts where you get your inspiration from.
So totally.
If you're an actor and a live streamer, watch Critical Role.
Yeah. Totally.
Get that. Man, those guys are killing it. Yes. You know? If you are a podcaster, listen to podcasts. If you're playing at Adventurers League, see what those really like, sit down at the tables with those guys that are doing and those girls that are doing really, really good adventures at the table.
Yeah.
If you're doing a homebrew game, just see what happens. See what the other people are doing. And give it a go. So depending on what you're playing and where you're playing and who you're playing with and what you're playing for, you know, those parameters are really going to change sort of what you prepare for. Because I'm actually playing D&D tonight with three people that have never played before.
Yeah, cool.
And so my preparation for that is I'm going to run an adventure I know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have some characters, pre-made characters ready for them to have a think about what they want to do.
Yeah.
Which is, and I'm just going to have a few little tidbits. I'm going to try and finish cap that somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas when I go to my other games, I'm like, okay, this is what I've got prepared and I have a lot prepared and we'll just see what gets their attention.
Totally.
You know? Yeah.
I was just thinking about that as you mentioned that. The podcast that we're about to record, because they're all actors, they all approached it from an actor kind of point of view.
Yeah, for sure.
So all three of them, certainly two of them at least, have really distinct voices, which is useful for a podcast. Again, like the players are then aware of the medium as well, which I think is they should join you in that. In the same way that we said at the start, you know, the players are not, you know, you need to be honest with them. That means talking about the constraints of that you're playing under. Like if you do have a time limit, then, you know, all the players should be aware of that. One person shouldn't just get up and be like, right, that's my time for the day. And everyone goes, oh, what? You know, like as simple as basic as that.
Yeah.
It's swept under the rug, but also everyone going, we have a 2 hour game. we need to get this amount done. We need to enjoy our time with each other. Well, we want to enjoy our time with each other. We have a time limit, so we've got to work to that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you and I, we played in our friend Nick's game, which was Monday night, and it was 5:30 to 9 o'clock.
Yep.
9 o'clock came, we finished.
We finished.
Because, you know, we're getting old now, and time is of the essence.
Well, and I mean, the podcast ones that I've got, my narrative is focused around...
Just having technical difficulties?
You just heard us silence for a bit. That's all right. But like, you know, so I've created a narrative which is, which breaks down into basically 40 minute, half an hour episodes. Like that's how long I expect the players to solve a thing and move on to the next.
Okay,
thing.
So you're doing
and
sort of like-
kind of episodical.
All right, and you're doing sort of one, I'm focusing on sort of one encounter per 40 minutes?
Yeah.
Cool. That's a good idea.
So that it feels like an episode so that the next thing comes along and that might just be a location. But so that at the very beginning of that location, I describe the beginning of the episode of the podcast, I'm describing the location and that's the hook.
Yeah.
So like I've deliberately created with those constraints in mind.
Yeah, cool. Cool. I think that's an excellent way to look at it, you know, because if you are building it for that sort of medium, then because I find that with our podcast is because I sort of aim to do about an hour, but it could be more than that. We've had episodes that go for an hour and a half. We've had episodes that go for about 40 minutes. And we're flexible with that because that's just how we are. But it is hard. That's a difficult thing to manage.
It's also difficult because you're not just creating it for the players. You're creating it, in the case of doing a podcast one, you're creating it for an audience as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
which is, again, another consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Adventurers League and that sort of thing, like the characters can float kind of, as I understand it, the characters can move between games effectively, or they have legacy.
Most adventures sort of exist independently.
Yeah.
So they might be part of the same narrative, but if you've done one adventure with one group of people, it's not necessarily you're going to be doing that whole season with that group of people.
No, that's right.
And I think that's what's appealing about Adventurers League. If you're time poor, and you don't have a party that you can play with, you can just rock up to Adventurers League. If you are traveling, like I've thought about it a few times, but if you're traveling, you can take your Adventurers League sheet with you and rock up at any table, pretty much anywhere in the world.
And that means that there are certain things that have to be obeyed and like rules that have to be like adhered to.
Yeah. And they're pretty good. Like I've gone down to Adelaide and played a few there and I've rocked up with my characters and it still seemed pretty good really. It's worked well.
Speaking of games, I'm going to ask you a question. What's your favorite game?
Game?
Yeah.
Like
what's your favorite RPG game? Like what system or what setting? Or combination of them. Because I've been thinking about this for a while and I have a metric and I want to explore it with you. But I want to kind of know what your favorite game is first.
Okay. Right. So I really like D&D, but I'm finding that I am exploring further and further. There are a number of games on my radar at the moment that I'm reading quite a bit. Firstly, Vampire. Vampire is very close to my heart. And I really enjoy the underbelly seedy stuff about that. The other one that has been getting a lot of my attention lately is Kids on Bikes. Have you heard of Kids on Bikes?
No, maybe.
Kids on Bikes is kind of like Stranger Things in the RPG.
Right. Okay, cool.
Very story driven.
Yeah, I have heard of this. Yes.
You have like a game master, but it is a lot more... It is a lot more group-based in, you know, so like it's not just the DM doesn't or the GM doesn't just tell you what happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The players can come up with those things, you know, like cool. It's really quite...
Collaborative.
Yeah, very collaborative, very free and lucid. So what would be my favorite? I'm going to say Vampire.
Vampire Masquerade.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
What? Tell me about, well...
Well, do you want to hear my little theory first?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so I have this theory that games get broken down into these two sections.
Yeah.
And that is fluff, which is setting and art and all that good stuff around, and then rules.
Yeah.
And those two things you can kind of divide into two.
Uh-huh.
And a game's goodness, its quality,
yeah,
is how well those two things align.
Mm.
So not that, you know, the setting is really, because, like, you know, you might like fantasy and you might just not like, but that isn't a quality, that isn't an indicator of how good a game is.
Yeah.
It's, for me, how well the, like, art and setting and all that kind of stuff around the game, in the game, the setting and all of those things aligns with the rules.
Okay.
And that, to me, is the indication of a good game.
All right.
There are plenty of games that have wonderful settings and have really great rules.
Yeah.
And they are awful together.
Yes.
They suck. And you make home rules to fix them because mm-hmm. you see the value in both. But to me, that's a bad game.
Okay.
Because all right. the two things don't align.
You will have to look at the artwork in both Blades in the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
And like Blades in the Dark has got just a beautiful style. The book, it's like a really nice book. And it's like A5 size as well. So it's quite small. And it's and same with Kids on Bikes. It's a small book.
Yeah. See, those are the things. They're rules light games.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. Well, I think Blades in the Dark has got some quite complex rules. But then it's also very narrative driven. It's a really good, and I really want to play it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, I don't know about if anybody else out there in podcast land knows, but for me, it's quite complex, and I think you need to play it quite a bit to get it sorted.
Mm-hmm.
But that marries your theory marries very well with what I like about Vampire.
Mm-hmm.
When I played in high school, the guy that ran the games, he set them in our local area. And so we would be doing reconnaissance on our way home from school because he'd be like, yeah, man, you know that house on such and such street? That's where the thing is. And so the next day we'd be like, okay, cool.
Let's go check it out.
Yeah, it's probably not great. Yeah. But I mean, for us, it was awesome because we wouldn't do anything illegal. But, you know, we would check out where, you know, check out the house out and whatnot. There's a few... In my neighborhood, there were quite a few abandoned houses, and so they often became sort
hauntings
of stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like havens for Nosferatu.
Totally.
And, yeah, so yeah, cool, sweet. Yeah. And then we're in Port Adelaide, so there are all these like...
Warehouses.
And then there's actually like a tunnel system in Port Adelaide that you can...
I didn't actually know that.
Yeah, you can get... When the tide's down, you can get into it. I think they've blocked it up now with bars, but... When I was younger, you could get quite a way in, and they actually link all the pubs, and it was for when they dropped off like barrels of beer.
Oh.
They used to roll them through these tunnels and offload them to all the pubs in Port Adelaide.
Right.
So obviously, all the Nosferatu.
Yeah, that's their sewer network.
Yeah,
that's
it was so good.
That's cool.
But the rules worked easy because it was D10, and just depending on how many dots you had, you rolled that many.
Nice.
You get too many botches, then it's all over.
Yeah.
So I felt like that. And they're just that whole setting, that CD, just taking what we have now and making it darker. And CD.
Yeah.
So that fits for me, fits with that. And then, you know, D&D, I just really like fantasy. I mean, even D&D, actually. When I play D&D, I don't particularly like high fantasy. I don't have a lot of magic in there, although the podcast is a bit more high fantasy. But my home games are often a bit darker and seedier. And if you go there are cities in my world that are like hives of scum and villainy. So that stuff sort of really seeps through. I guess that. And then back to Blades in the Dark, that is all about that. So yes. I guess that's my my interest
the tonal
in that.
Consistency.
Yeah. I guess that's my brother's fault. Both of my brothers' fault for making me watch things like Pulp Fiction when I was far too young to watch Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, what was the movie that we both said that we watched?
Oh, Clue. Not that dark and seedy, but
a weird and meta plot. Three endings for the.
Yeah. And lots of innuendo right from the start. Much. And we both watched this when we were five. If anyone's seen Clue, which is the film based off of Cluedo.
Or Clue if you're an American.
Yeah,
it's a great movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if it holds up, but I remember it being really funny and really kind
it
of witty.
I think it's funny. I mean, I don't know if I'm just, if it's just nostalgia, but I watch it still quite regularly. I think it's cool.
Oh, okay. Cool. I haven't seen it in a while, but I'll check it out again.
Tim Curry is on point.
But I was thinking about that, the system and the setting marry for my favorite game.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite game changes every day of the week. but one that I've been reflecting on as a really successful game was Dark Heresy, because the game is incredibly violent and because the game is incredibly like you will die sort of setting. There are two system things that make that really interesting for me. One is this thing called fate points.
Yeah.
Which if your character, which allows you to reroll and do a few other special things.
Mm-hmm.
If your character dies, you burn a fate point, you spend it, you have maybe three or two tops.
Okay.
And your character staves off death by like just by the skin of their teeth.
Yeah, okay.
That happens a lot.
They just grit them. Okay.
Right, but it's this idea of system informed by setting and vice versa. Like you know that your character only has a finite like number of like effectively death saves. Like these are like your character's arm gets blown off, you're bleeding out. I burn a fate point. I have one left now for the rest of the campaign forever. I managed to stem the bleeding and pass out.
See, like that's something that I've forgotten about. Probably my other... I can't tell you one favorite game. My other favorite game would be Cthulhu, Call of Cthulhu, which I've only played a little bit of, but I just loved the idea that your characters are pretty much expendable, and they're either going to die or go insane.
That's right. And the madness system is pretty good
in
that game.
Yeah, I think so. And you can, and I really like the way that you can level up in that, the way your skills improve, as opposed to level up. And listening, there's another podcast called the, I've forgotten it now. Vintage RPG Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of spawned out of an Instagram account. And now they do pretty much weekly episodes about vintage RPG, and they talk a lot about Cthulhu. And they talked about one of their campaigns that they did from start to finish. And they're like, yeah, man, I had like 10 characters throughout that campaign.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I'm like, that is so cool.
Yeah.
I really, really like that idea. It changes your idea about RPGs, turning it from like, I like to think of it almost like fantasy football.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, this one's busted. This we're going to have to trade them out.
Trade them in.
Yeah.
I mean, what am I getting back for this guy?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's the good quality stuff is always married when the system and the setting work together.
Yeah.
When they don't, it's like a massive mess. And I really enjoyed 4th edition D&D, which is a controversial opinion.
Yeah,
lots of people don't like it. And I think the reason for that is because what a lot of people came from 3.5 was that the fantasy wasn't high fantasy just yet. Like, it allowed you to play high fantasy in it, but it didn't dictate to you what the setting was. Like, it allowed you to be gritty. It allowed you to, like, care. 4th edition, by and large, is like, nah, it's high fantasy. That's it. Your characters are heroes. Straight out of the gate, they're better than most.
Yeah.
And if you buy into that, then the game is really good because, you know, every action being this magnificent thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's a daily action, a thing you can only do once a day or once an encounter. And this, you bring, like, every action is, like, this massive thing. There's no, like, standard attack in 4th edition at all. Well, you can, but it's useless. Like, everything is significant.
Yeah.
That speaks to this idea of high heroes.
Yep.
Whereas if you approach it from 3.5 standard, and I'm not saying that 4th edition is, like, you have to like it.
No.
You know, I'm not saying that at all. But in terms of its system and its setting marrying,
it's good.
It's good.
See, it's high fantasy. Listening to or watching Matt Colville's Running the Game, he talked about using 4th edition rules to make 5th edition monsters better or more dangerous or more engaged. I can't remember the terminology, how he phrased it. But I went based on that, I went and got myself a copy of 4th edition Monster Manual. And monsters do heaps of cooler stuff.
Yeah.
There's lots of just little things. Like I ran an encounter with hyenas and there's all these little
things that
they
do.
Yeah. Yes. Little, and it tweaks. Is. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
And it's cool. And it's all this, I mean, yes, it makes a bit more rules heavy, but it's actually just ideas for a DM to use.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a really good thing about having that stuff still there.
I think like they brought this in 4th edition, but the idea of, I think they brought it in 4th edition, but this idea of like announcing to the table that this dragon has an opportunity to recharge its breath.
Yeah.
And rolling that dice in front of the players, meaning like that's it recharging its breath.
Mm.
And the players knowing, and you can steer to that again, like.
And they have like a I think they have like a radiating heat. So if you're within like 20 feet or whatever, you are taking damage.
Slowly burning.
So cool. Well, Chris, I think.
Is that all the questions? I thought we'd have more. Not more.
No.
We've chatted for a long time. Thank you for staying with us if you've been listening this whole time.
If you actually listened to all this, we really appreciate that.
Yeah.
And kudos to you for just being, you know.
Hope you learned something.
Sticking in there, being a proper digger. It's good.
Hope we learned something, you and I.
Yeah, I learned a little bit. You're going to have to tell me more about Dark Heresy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I want to learn about this Knives in the Dark.
Yeah, Blades in the Dark.
Blades in the Dark, rather.
Well, you're going to learn about it right now.
Sweet.
Well, thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed. If you have enjoyed this, please let us know, because we will be doing some more interviews with other DMs and people that are making content for D&D and other tabletop RPGs. So thank you very much and take care.
Bye.
You have been listening to a Committee Quest production. Our music is supplied by Retro Reverb Records. You can see the details in the show notes. Our ambient sounds are supplied by Sword Coast Soundscapes. If you want to know more about us, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Committee Quest. We would like to thank our Patreon supporters for supporting us. You can head over to Patreon and support us there. Another way you can show your support is by leaving us a review on whatever app it is you use to listen to podcasts. Thank you very much, and take care.